All right, let's see if this is working. I believe it is working. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So here are a few Cheers facts of my own. That sitcom was the very first sitcom I saw as a child back in Puerto Rico. My family, they were fans of it. And I actually went even into the Frasier sitcom afterwards and watched the entire thing. That's one of my favorite all-time shows, right? In fact, such a big fan that Maddie and I, back in, I think this was 2007, she used to work for American Airlines, and we used to travel. I mean, because we didn't have children back then. We love our children, but back then we had the freedom to move around, and we had access to the traveling through American Airlines, and we chose to go to the city of Boston for the first time ever, and a historical city, and me wanting to visit all of the monuments and the historically important sites, I visited the corner where Cheers took place. So obviously it took place in a studio, but I don't know how many of you have been in Boston, but that's a fun little thing that you can do. There's like a store where they have merch. You can buy that stuff if you're interested at all. If not, just keep going to the right places, the important places. All right. Okay. I don't remember that. It was some time ago. And I have four children. I forget things. Anyways, so I promised last week that every time I teach for this series on the praying through the Psalms, we were going to review some Spanish. Okay? And so last week we discussed the proper pronunciation of the vowels in the Spanish language. And I said that Spanish vowels in Spanish, if you remember, have a very distinct sound. And if you get the exact sound, you're going to sound like a rock star if you try to pronounce any word in Spanish, just by getting these five letters right. So I said it was a simple sound. Each one of these is not a complex sound. It's just one simple sound, right? So A is the first one. E.
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 O.
O.
U. All right, again, if you ever want to try your Spanish with someone, if you get those five vowels right, you're going to sound already like you really understand the language. The last one, which is a little more complicated, is the R letter, especially for native English speakers, right? It says this is the one that gives people the most trouble. But I know that I'm sure vocalists and teachers who teach music practice this with their students all the time. Am I right about that, Miss Jessie? Right? It's one of the things that you can do to warm up your mouth. So, rrr is how you roll your R's, okay? So this, I chose this word because this is a word that translates perfectly, right? Because the word robot is an English word, and it is spelled exactly the same way in Spanish, except and instead of saying robot, you say robot. Robot. So here you go, a rolling of the R. R. O. And then the other O, right? So robot. Does that make any sense? All right, well, there you go. That's your Spanish lesson for today. Let's put this aside.
I don't know how the robot's going to come up in the conversation.
It is actually related. It's going to be a seamless transition, I promise. Okay, so why robot? Why the word robot? I chose this word in the context of the Psalms because I would like for us to be reminded that we are not robots. Okay? In contrast to what some technocrats in our world would have us believe, we are not robots, we are not machines, we are human beings. As such, we are made in the image of God, and we are capable of many wonderful and beautiful things. And we are not automats and machines and programs that you can make do exactly what somebody else is programming us to do. And the Psalms, among other things, have always been an invitation, in my opinion, to express our humanity in honesty before the Lord. It's why the Psalms can be a bit tricky when it comes to theology, because they are so honest and they are so raw. So when we read the Psalms, we're being invited to be fully human, to allow ourselves to be honest before the Lord in our prayer life. Don't know how many of you were here last week when we introduced the series, but I thought it was so interesting that the speaker was talking about the liturgies of our life. How many of you were here last week? So our speaker reminded us that in our lives, we get ourselves trapped into certain patterns that may be, to a certain extent, toxic to our life. Things that are not originally bad things for us, but because we get so busy and we get so heavy with responsibilities and all the things that we have to do, we lose track of God's patterns. And he was encouraging us to use liturgies to take us out of those patterns and reintroduce us to the patterns of God. And I thought that was such a timely presentation, considering that we're looking at the Psalms. So as living creatures, we have need of many things, right? We need water, we need food, shelter, we need love, we need grace, we need mercy. We also need to praise and to worship. Human beings are created in the image of God, and as such, we are hardwired to worship. The problem is that we forget how to worship. We forget how to praise and when to praise. Hopefully, we're going to go through this idea this morning. That's my main goal. Okay. Well, God, of course, being our creator, he knows that we have need of all of these things. And so today, I would like for us to spend some time thinking through the idea that the Psalms, some more than others, offer us opportunities to align ourselves with God and his purposes by placing us in our rightful place as creatures before him. Being placed in our rightful place before the Lord should cause us to honor and ascribe to him all majesty and glory. And that's why I have chosen to begin our discussion by discussing the Psalms of praise. So today we're going to look at a psalm, one of my favorite psalms of praise, which is Psalm 8. More on that a little bit later. But first, some introductory words about the book of the Psalms just in general. And by the way, I have had over the years people at some point engage me or reach out to me and ask me where they might find, I guess because I went to seminary, and I'm sure pastors and teachers everywhere get this asked all the time, which is, would you recommend a good commentary on the Bible? And that's always a complicated, for a seminarian, that is a really, really complicated question, because the reality is that the world of commentaries can be very, very complicated. There are many different types of commentaries. They can be introductory to books of the Bible. They can be introductory to entire sections of the Bible. They can be commentaries that have been written from a linguistic perspective. They are commentaries that have been written from a social, historical perspective. I mean, the list goes on and on. If you were to go to a bookstore in a theology school, you're going to be confused with the sheer amount of books you're going to find that are commentaries. So I have actually found the resource that I'm going to recommend if you are one of these people who wants to find a resource that you might keep to a side as you go through your reading of scripture and you want to consult somebody. It's a very simple, down-to-earth comment on the entire scriptures, which was put together by one of my professors at seminary. His name is Tom Constable. And Tom Constable, he's one of the founding members of Plano Bible Church. And if you go to their website, right there on the first page towards the bottom, there's a section that reads resources. If you click on resources, you're going to find Tom Constable's notes on the entire Bible. So if you're looking for a very simple introduction to a book of the Bible or a section of the Bible, that is a great place to start. And it is free. They will not charge you for this. And it is in PDF format, so you can even download it and keep it for yourself. So I would highly recommend it. It's a great place to start as you to consult as you read through the scriptures.
SonicLight.com.
It's SonicLight.com as well. Yeah, I think it was originally just on SonicLight, but they just made it, I just learned that they made it available at some point through their website. So I guess there's probably two ways to get to it, but one of them is plain old Bible Church. You know the series, correct? Okay. So I say that because we're going to briefly look at the book of the Psalms in terms of facts about the book, right? So first thing is the title of the book Psalms in the Hebrew Bible is Tehillim, which translated means praise songs. Now, the Septuagint, which is a very early, the earliest possible extant text that we have of a Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, they translated the title of the book of Psalms with the word psalmoi. That's a Greek word that can be translated as songs to the accompaniment of a stringed instrument. And actually, there are certain translations in the Bible that will add this as a note to the book of the Psalms. You will see the book of the Psalms and it'll say something like, not many new modern translations do it, but songs to the accompaniment of a stringed instrument. Over time, that word psalmoi actually dropped the accompaniment of the stringed instrument, and it just became a word that means songs of praise. Okay, so already by those two facts, a very basic look at the title of the book, we should already have a basic understanding with regards to the contents of that book. When we are looking at the book of Psalms, we are essentially looking at a hymnal. It was originally meant to be song. The community was originally meant to consider these words to the accompaniment of music. So it was a part of the liturgy of the people of Israel, and it was meant to be enjoyed and meditated upon alongside music. And in fact, if you look at the Psalms, many Psalms will give instructions to musicians. Some of those words, we don't necessarily know the meaning of them. If you want to have a specific study of the meaning of all of these notations in the book of the Psalms, Chuck is your man. I'm sure he can answer all of your questions with regards to all of the Hebrew words in the entire Hebrew Bible. but anyways, I just wanted us to keep in mind as we're looking at the Psalms that this was originally meant to be songs. It's a hymnal, okay? Now, scholars divide the book of the Psalms in five separate categories. They are, and this is in no particular order, Psalms of Thanksgiving, Psalms of Royalty, Psalms of Wisdom, Psalms of Lament, and Psalms of Praise, which is what we're going to be looking at today. A dictionary definition is a very easy place to start our discussion. Dictionary definition of the word praise. Praise is the expression or approval or admiration for someone or something. Now, when it comes to the Psalms, of course, we are invited to direct our approval and admiration towards our Creator. But we all know what praise is, right? I mean, we don't have to go too much into it. Each and every one of us naturally has a tendency to praise. When we see something that we like, we say something about it. Oh, that was great. That was awesome. If we watch sports and we see a sports figure, an athlete, do something amazing, we usually have expressions of praise either towards the individual or towards the team or the situation that is happening. Certainly, we praise our lovers, our family members, our friends for the great things they do. And so it is very natural for us to want to express praise for any number of reasons. When I was getting ready for this class, I was reminded of a quote by C.S. Lewis that I read years ago. This is probably when I'm 20 or 21 years old. I read a book titled The Four Loves. And Lewis is... It's a hard reading. Yeah, I can't even remember because it was so long ago. But I remember reading one quote that was so powerful to me that I committed it to memory right then. Because it gave me a lot to think about. And it was this. The human mind is generally far more eager to praise and dispraise than to describe and define. The human mind is far more eager to praise and dispraise than to describe and define. When I read that years ago in the context of the book, and if you read further in The Four Loves, what I understood was that he was trying to let us know that it's easy to describe love in emotional terms that are known to us, especially the closer they get to our affections, but it is way harder to describe what love truly is and the different types of love. So in that context, he was saying, we should train ourselves to be the type of people who think clearly, who are willing to think long and hard and take the effort and the pain to describe and define things. And if we're willing to take the time and effort to describe and define things, we may have a better understanding of the different types of love. What I missed back then, which came back to me this week, was the fact that he is stating, as a matter of fact, that the human mind is eager to praise and dispraise. So it is a very essential component of what it means to be a human being that we have a desire to express praise. Okay? Now, I'm going to follow it with another C.S. Lewis quote. This one's going to be a little bit longer, but I'm going somewhere with it, I promise. This is a book that C.S. Lewis wrote on the Psalms. It's titled Reflections on the Psalms, which I highly recommend. Again, I read that years ago. I haven't read it for this study, but I would definitely recommend it because he has a lot of great ideas, especially with regards to the musical aspect of the Psalms. He has some neat thoughts there, but this is what he said. I think we delight to praise what we enjoy because the praise not merely expresses, but it completes the enjoyment. It is, it's appointed consummation, if you will. It is not out of compliment that lovers keep on telling one another how beautiful they are. The delight is incomplete till it is expressed. It is frustrating to have discovered a new author and not to be able to tell anyone how good he is. To come suddenly at the turn of the road upon some mountain valley of unexpected grandeur and then to have to keep silent because the people with which you care for it, so because the people with you care for it no more than for a tin can in the ditch. To hear a good joke and find no one to share it with. The Scotch Catechism says that man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. But we shall then know that these are the same thing. Fully to enjoy is to glorify. In commanding us to glorify him, God is inviting us to enjoy him. I want us to land there for a little bit. Do we take time in our life daily to... You don't have to answer this question if you don't want to, but do we usually take time to enjoy God truly in the midst of our life? How many times in the midst of our difficulties and the pains and the struggles of life do we actually take some time to enjoy God's presence, his goodness, his faithfulness, and to express that to him? I know that I don't always do it. Most times I allow the circumstances of my life to kind of drag me down into a pattern of complaining, expressing frustration, which are not bad things. But if I'm not careful, the patterns of my life consistently take me to that grumbling, if you will, rather than recognizing God and praising him as he commands. Any thoughts on that? It looked like him wanted to say something.
I'm still stuck on the word displeasure, to be honest, because I didn't even know that was a word. It's such a nice way to say
Dispraise.
Yeah.
I was thinking pleasure, displeasure. You could say it's such a nicer way to say lots of things.
I know. Well, that's C.S. Lewis for you, always coming up with the right way to say things. Yeah.
No, but I do agree that half the joy of seeing something or experiencing something is sharing it. I get that.
My mind goes to, it's very interesting in that, my mind goes to the Lord's Prayer and how the model that we're given for prayer is our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. It's that very idea of the first thing that we're going to start with when we approach our God is that praise, that adoration, is who he is. And it fits right in line with that same idea. It's just we reorient ourselves vertically of who God is and giving him praise as the starting place for communion with him.
Yeah, I think getting back to the idea of liturgies, when you sort of have a liturgy of praise, then it keeps your heart elevated compared to when you have a liturgy of grumbling, it keeps your heart.
I love that.
Oriented towards negativity.
I love that. Those are great thoughts.
I've had some conversations, Chris and I have talked about like what the joy of the Lord is my strength truly means. And like I've rarely thought about joy or enjoying God as the strength to get through things. It's more of like I'm a recipient of joy, and it's only like a beneficiary to my current experience, but it actually can be a strengthening thing.
You get strength from praising and glorifying God.
Yeah.
Amen.
So, bouncing off of that with the joy of the Lord, I was praying Psalm 1 Peter 3:15 earlier, and I get this from Randy Newman, but talked about different motivations for true evangelism, not all the things we think of that are not false evangelism. Sanctify the Lord as King of your heart, which is praise. Put him in the right place in your heart. And when you have that, then you have the love, the joy you want to share in it. People see it and want to ask questions. Why do you have that hope?
Mm-hmm.
And also you're ready because you have that joy. Oh, let me tell you about him because I love him and you'll love him too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. But if,
yeah.
So anyway, but it's the proper motivation for a heart that shares.
I love it. Great thoughts. Yes. Anyways, I wanted to kind of close out this section by thinking about that idea that our joy is not complete until we have shared it through praise, through some sort of praise. And it is a big part of what it means to be human, to enjoy things that way. We don't just take pleasure in them, but we actually share them with others. And in the Psalms of Praise, we are invited to do this with God himself. And as you all have more eloquently than I said, it's a great starting place for anything in life. All right? So I wanted us to look at one of my favorite praise psalms in the Bible, which is Psalm 8. Psalm 8 is recognized by many scholars to be, to a certain extent, a comment on Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 through 28, which is that purpose statement for mankind. I'm going to read it. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Psalm 8 is recognized, as I said, by many scholars to be a sort of, it's a song for sure, because it is a psalm, but it is making a comment about the position of mankind in creation and the image of God in man. So I personally find that Psalm 8 is a great place for us to meet the Creator, theologically speaking, in two different ways simultaneously. The one thing you are doing is exalting Him and praising Him. That's what the psalmist is inviting us to do, but he is inviting us to do it by setting us in our place as creatures, in the comment he makes about mankind. So when I'm reading this psalm, that's how I'm reading it. I remind myself that David is trying to clarify with me some ideas of what I am as a human being and what I am not. But regardless, I am to praise and worship my Creator. And so what I wanted us to do today for the next 5 or 6 minutes, I want to bring it all together by having us listen to a musical rendition of Psalm 8 that I came across. It's by Shane and Shane. I really don't know a whole lot about contemporary Christian artists, to be absolutely honest with you. But I wanted us to spend some time listening to the Psalms in music form and have that experience, because originally the Psalms were meant to be musical. Now, obviously they're not going to sing the entire Psalm with music, and it is going to be a little bit repetitive. And I know that sometimes when worship songs become repetitive, they can become a little bit difficult because we keep going over something over and over and over again. I don't know if you feel that, but I've heard a lot of people say it, and I certainly feel that sometimes. But I would like to invite you to consider the possibility that sometimes repeating one line over and over again has a very powerful use. And in fact, the Psalms do this. Some Psalms repeat the same line many times in the course of the entire song, and that is purposeful. The author is wanting us to focus on one aspect of God's truth over and over again, almost in like a chant. It's a mnemonic device. It's meant to have you think about this, but also remember it. So, with all of that said, I want us to listen to a musical rendition of Psalm 8, and this is the last thing we're going to do. I don't know if we're going to run out of time. This thing is about 7 minutes long. If we are running out of time, I will just cut it off and we'll pray and be dismissed. It sound good? All right. I think we're ready, right, Chuck? All right, there you go. Ah, ads. Majestic